by three, and because this Coxeter lecture will start at 3:30. So today I'm going to talk about this T-duality and also how to derive mirror of how to find mirror of some large number of some class of examples, which are almost all the examples known so far. So let me just outline this, how to find this mirror or the derivation. So idea of derivation. So last time and the week before, we have discussed, we have seen that by starting with some very simple gauge theory called linear sigma model, you can get a non-linear sigma model by, say, taking some limit of taking the gauge coupling constant to the infinity. So non-linear sigma model, or some model which may not be even describable as a non-linear sigma model, but in some case you can describe it as some very different theory called Landau-Ginzburg or just orbifold. Okay. The idea is to perform something called T-duality to this linear sigma model to obtain mirror linear sigma model, and then take the same limit to obtain, to see what you get here, and this must be the mirror of this nonlinear sigma model or Landau-Ginzburg orbifold or the whole family of theories that connects them. So that's the basic idea, and so let's start with explaining what T-duality is. So let's consider a very simple model, sigma model whose target space is a circle of radius r. Or circumference 2 pi r. So let's call it S1 sub r. Then if we are considering sigma model, so we are mapping wall sheet to this target space, or at a slice, time slice, it will map a string to this target space. And string state is characterized by the following data. First is the momentum, and the second is the winding number, and the third is the oscillation detail. And it's easy to see that this radius dependence resides only in here. Oscillation dependence doesn't care what the radius is. And the momentum is, in this case, when the target space is compact, it is quantized. So the momentum P is given by some integer over R. Well, L is integer, so it's quantized. The reason is that, so this is a quantum state, so it's described by some wave function, say, of momentum P. Say, let's suppose X is this coordinate, then X is identified with X 2 pi r, X plus 2 pi r. And the wave function, so the plane wave is given by this. This is the wave function for the state with definite momentum. Now, it must be single-valued. Valued on this, namely, it must be the same. This shift by, say, 2 pi r must have the same value as this. So that requires 2 pi p to be, sorry, 2 pi r, sorry, e to the I, 2 pi, sorry, e I p, and then 2 pi r to be 1, and that requires this form. So that's why it's quantized. And also, winding number is, of course, quantized. M, quantized. So this state is labeled by two integers and oscillation detail. And the space-time energy, this is space-time energy, the target space energy, energy of a string without oscillation, but with momentum, no, momentum L of R and winding number M, is given by E squared is the standard rule, P squared times mass squared, and P is just that. And what is the mass of a string? String has a finite tension, and it is the tension times the length of the string. If the string has a winding number m, then the length of the string is 2 pi r times m. So it must be proportional to Rm. And with respect to some suitable unit, it's just Rm squared. So I have chosen some specific value for alpha prime, or this R is with respect to such alpha prime, such tension, sorry. The tension of the string, then it is given by this. Okay. Usually, if you want to make the explicit dependence on the tension, you write it like this, and this is the length, and the tension is 2 pi square root alpha prime. No, the tension is alpha prime, sorry. Something called, this is the number that characterizes the tension. So it's just this, so Rm over alpha prime square. But I'm setting a convention that says alpha prime is 1, so this is the right expression. So this is a not. So this is, you notice that this is invariant under the exchange of r to 1 over r, l to m, and m to l. So this implies something surprising. So this implies an equivalence of equivalence of two sigma models on different target spaces. So the one target is the original one, the circle of radius r, and another is circle of radius 1 over r, or alpha prime over r. So the large radius circle sigma model is actually equivalent to small radius circle sigma model. And that's T-duality. So this is T-duality. This is called T-duality. And but we must be careful when we do this, then the momentum and winding number must be exchanged. So the momentum here must be exchanged with the winding number, and the winding number here corresponds to the momentum here. I want to mention that this momentum is associated with this isometry, the symmetry of the system. For each symmetry, there is a conserved charge, and this is the conserved charge. Momentum is the conserved charge. Whereas winding number is a topological charge. That's the number that characterizes the topology of the configuration. And the T-duality, this net charge and topological charge exchange. And this is actually a typical property of duality in field theory. This is actually the simplest example. And the more familiar example is this electric-magnetic duality in Maxwell theory. I think target space duality, T from target. Yes. Okay. And let me just rewrite this statement using some variable. So let's suppose this is the coordinate X, and this is the dual coordinate, T dual coordinate. So X is equivalent to, is identified with this, and X tilde is identified with this, of course, because the radius is 1 over r. And the momentum, the conserved charge density for the momentum is just this, time derivative of X, because if it's moving, it takes some value. And the winding number is density is measured by simply the space derivative of this. Because if you take the integral over this for some winding number configuration, winding configuration, then that will have non-trivial value. So I'm assuming that we are considering, so T and sigma is the time and space coordinate of the string. So the conserved charge is the sigma integral of this density, and that will be a measure the winding number. And similarly, this must be mapped to this. Okay. Okay, so this is very simple, and this is even trivial, but this is very interesting. It looks surprising if you first see this. Okay. So let me give you another way to derive it, because that will be useful for more, when you consider more general case. So this is using the path integral. Okay, let's study this system, this original system. On a Riemann surface of some Euclidean Riemann surface of some genus. So on a Riemann surface. With metric, let's just choose a metric H on this. And instead of directly starting with this sigma model whose target space is a circle of radius R, let's just consider another system that gives rise to such a system. Let's consider a scalar field phi, which is a map from sigma to circle of radius 1, say. So let me, so this is, okay, yeah, anyway. Yes, and another field, which is the one form on this real valid one form on this Riemann surface with the following action. The action is 1 over 2 pi and 1 over 2 r squared, and the b squared using this metric, and the volume element is also determined by this metric h. And another term, I over 2 pi, and then b wedge d of phi, and integrate it along on the sigma. Okay, and I'm going to perform path integral in two different ways. The first way is do the integral over b first, this one form first, and the second way I do the integral on the phi first. So if you do this first way, integral, then this is just quadratic in B, so this is just Gaussian integral, and you can do the Gaussian integral, and you're left with something else. Or in other words, alternatively, you can just solve this with respect to B and plug the result back into this action, and then that's the remnant. And if you solve it, then what we find, the solution is given by I r squared star of b phi, star using this metric. and the orientation. And if you plug the result into here, then what you find is d phi squared over sigma. And that's the sigma model whose target space is a circle of radius r, because r times phi is like x. So this is the sigma model on the circle of radius r, where x is given by r times phi. Okay, so this is this. So this system is equivalent to this system we have been considering. Now let's do another way. The other way. Let's do the path integral over phi first. Then what you find, I will explain this later. What you find is B can be written as D of something else, phi tilde, where phi tilde is a map from sigma to the circle of radius 1 again. So this will be explained later. Now if you admit this, then okay, by the way, roughly speaking, if you do the path integral over phi, you have I times some real number, and phi integral will give you D of phi equal to 0, and locally it's if B is closed, then locally it is exact. And if you take into account the fact that phi is a circle-valued function, then you will find that this is written in terms of another circle-valued function in this way. I will explain later about this in more detail. So this is the role of, so constraining B into this way is the role of this term and this role of this phi integral. So you're left with just this term, and the action is just plug this B expression into the result. This. And this is the sigma model on the circle of radius 1 of r. And this dual variable is just given by 1 of r phi tilde. Okay? Now let me explain this crucial point that B can be written as D of a circle valued function. Before saying this, let me just still continue with this conclusion coming from this. So B has two expressions. One is this, and another is this. And let's just compare two expressions for B. If you just compare, it's just R times D of phi is 1 over R times I star D of phi tilde. And this is, I remind you that this is a Euclidean setup, and if you want to go back to the Minkowski space, then you just do the Wick rotation. And then this is precisely the statement, the same statement as this. In other words, from this you see that this say this is actually the winding number current is the same as the momentum for for phi is the same as the momentum for phi tilde. And if you take the star of this equation and multiply by I, and then do the weak rotation, you get momentum for phi is winding number for phi tilde. And you can also show using this path integral, this method, that if you have some point defect at some point in x on the Riemann surface, around which this phi goes to phi plus 2 pi and comes back, so phi goes to 2 pi. So this is around this point defect, there's a winding number for phi. Then this fact must mean that there must be a new creation of momentum in here, and this is given by the insertion of this operator or this field at this point x, because that's the field which creates a momentum of unit momentum. If you consider configuration like 2 pi times n, then you will have in phi tilde of x. And actually, you can also use this path integral to see this relation. And this fact will be useful later in this derivation of mirror symmetry. Okay, let me just explain this thing. Let's call it this explanation of this. So, as said there, phi is a map from sigma to R mod 2 pi z. So if you consider a Riemann surface of some genus, there can be non-trivial cycles. And phi may change by 2 pi integer along these cycles. So that's the difference from having a map from sigma to just R. So that means that, so this fact means that d of phi can be written as d of phi naught plus 2 pi I m I omega I, where phi naught is an honest map to the real number, and mi's are integers, and this omega I, say if it is genus G, then I from 1 to 2G, this is a basis of the integral homology group. So if it has some winding number, then one of this MI is non-zero. Now let's do the first. So this path integral over phi means path integral over phi naught and sum over these integers. So this phi means sum over integers M1 through M2G, and then also this path integral of this real value function. And let's just do this first. This will give us the by this will give us so this I over 2 pi b wedge d phi naught part, I'm considering this part. This is by Stokes' theorem, plus or minus this d of b and phi naught. And phi naught integral will simply tell us that this must be zero. So this must be, this requires that b dB equal to zero. So it's a closed one. B is a closed one form. And all the closed one form can be written as the exact part and some other part. Finitely many other parts. And that's given by a linear combination of these omegas, where A's are real numbers. Okay, so that's the effect of finite integral. And let's next consider the sum over M1 through M2G. So let's just write down what we are summing over. This is this. So e to the, okay, let's, and the summand is e to the I over 2 pi, or with minus, and let's plug this into the place of b. Wedge. So we have already used this part, so you're only left with, from d phi, you're only left with this part. 2 pi sum over I, mi, omega I. This is over sigma. And this term, this times this, is zero, but again by using the Stokes theorem. Oh, sorry. I forgot to say that this is an honest map to the real number, honest function. So you can use the partial derivative, a partial integration, and then that will annihilate this omega I part. So there's nothing from this. And you're left with this part, and it's just to compute M1 through M2G, and 2 pi cancels, and minus e to the minus I sum over ij aj mi and integration over omega j wedge omega I. Now it's a fact that this is a invertible integral matrix, this 2G times 2G matrix. So if you wish, you can replace the sum over MI times this by just sum over MJ. So in any case, the result is that, okay, so let me just write M1 prime to M2G prime, e to the minus I AJ MJ prime. And the result is that we want this AJ to be 2 pi times integer. And it's, the result is sum over N1 through N2G, and product of delta function of a j and 2 pi n j. Okay, so that's the effect of summing over this winding number n j's. So in any case, the collecting the whole thing, you find that B is written as this exact part and the cohomology part, which is 2 pi n j for some integer n j and then omega j. And this is nothing but D of phi tilde, where phi tilde is a function with values in the circle of radius 2 pi. So that's the explanation of this. Okay. Are there questions? So this is the two derivation of the duality, and I'm going to use the second derivation repeatedly, and let's just consider one simple generalization, which is the generalization to the supersymmetric case. So in particular, 2,2 supersymmetric. Let me just consider the first the simplest case, which is the sigma model whose target space is not a circle, because if you want to have 2,2 supersymmetry, we want the target space to be even dimensional. And if you just consider a plain sigma model without torsion, then we want the target space to be Kähler manifold. And as the simplest case, I take the target space to be just the cylinder of, say, circumference or radius r, or circumference 2 pi r. And I denote this coordinate phi. This is the phi plus 2 pi. Phi is the coordinate with period 2 pi. And if you want this coordinate x, then you just have to multiply by r, just as before. And then this direction, coordinate in this direction, I just denoted by A, say. And the complex coordinate is given by, say, A plus I phi. And we're going to consider a supersymmetric case, I consider chiral superfield, whose lowest component is this thing, phi plus chiral superfield, and this is a periodic variable of period 2 pi I. Okay, because phi has period 2 pi, var phi has period 2 pi, and the sigma model action. Lagrangian can be written as this super coordinate, a super super states form expression, and it's just given by this. Okay. Now let's do the T duality along this imaginary part of phi, this var phi, and and we do it here using the super field or super field formalism. So perform T duality on superspace 2,2 superspace. Well, it's essentially just doing this just honest T duality along this imaginary part of phi, but I just do everything else together. So it's just what I'm doing is the same thing. By the way, this is given by this paper by Rochek, Perlinde. So the starting Lagrangian is similar to the case of this bosonic sigma model. You introduce some other variable, B, and I just consider this B is a real superfield, and phi is as above. Okay. If you integrate out first over the B field, over the field B, then B is solved using this as r squared phi plus phi bar. And then plug this result back into this, you get the action. And this is nothing but this starting Lagrangian. And this is, right, so this is the starting system of cylinder of circumference 2 pi r. And if you do the second way of integration, phi integral, phi phi bar integral, that will constrain, so this is linear in phi, and this will give you a constraint on B, and that constraint is B must be written as phi tilde plus phi tilde bar, with phi tilde is a twisted chiral superfield, and periodicity 2 pi again, or 2 pi I again. I will explain this again later, but if you just use this, just plug this into here, then what you get is this Lagrangian. Phi tilde bar and phi tilde. And this is the sigma model whose target space is a cylinder of radius 1 over r or circumference 2 pi over r. Okay. Let me explain why this is true. Why this phi phi bar integral leads to this constraint? Well, this this periodic part will be is the same as before, but y b superfield can be written as a sum of twisted chiral superfield and its complex conjugate. And that may not be obvious, so let me just explain. So the proof of so this action includes this term. Okay. And this term, this is the integration of all four fermionic coordinates, but for Grassmann variables, integration is essentially the same as the derivative. And this is annihilated by this d bar and d minus bar. And so if you choose to first take this derivative, then this acts only on this part. So this is actually plus or minus d2 theta. The rest of this theta bar integral is theta integral. So you have only this times phi. And similarly, this part, this is annihilated by d plus and d minus. So what you find is this phi bar. And phi and phi bar integral just constrain this and this to be both vanishing. D plus bar D minus bar B is equal to D plus D minus B equal to zero. And the general solution to this is this. Sum over twisted chiral and its complex conjugate superfield. So the is that B is written as some twisted chiral and its complex conjugate. Because we want this B. We started B to be real. So B must be the sum. This is twisted chiral. And mind you that twisted chiral obeys this equation, annihilated by D bar plus and D minus, and since they commute, of course this solves this, and you can also show that this general solution can actually you can construct such twisted chiral superfield by assuming that B obey this equation. Okay. And another thing you can do is to compare the two expressions for B, expressions for this and this. Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, how do I go from here to here? Well, L is the system that the Lagrangian that describes this system, supersymmetric sigma model whose target space is this cylinder. L prime is some another system. I just started with some other system.
What's the relation between L and L prime?
Okay, if you take the first, if you consider the first B integral first, then you reduce to this. The system with Lagrangian L. If you take the phi bar integral, then you end up with another Lagrangian, which is yes. So comparison of two expressions for B tell us that R times phi plus phi bar is equal to 1 over R times phi tilde plus phi tilde bar. Let's denote, so this phi lowest component is denoted by this. Let's denote this lowest component of this twisted chiral superfield as this. Then what this means in particular is that the lowest component expression for this equation is RA is simply 1 over RA tilde. So this is just a local change of variable, or just rescaling of a variable. And the second component, the second lowest component expression equation coming from this is R time derivative of phi is 1 over R space derivative of phi tilde, and R space derivative of phi is 1 over R time derivative of phi tilde. So this is indeed this teleology. So this manipulation on this superspace is indeed doing just the rescaling of rescaling of the variable in this direction, and also teleology along the circle direction. So this you may find that this is just adding trivial part to this ordinary sigma model in the circle, and also adding supersymmetry. But what we find here is very important, that phi describing the coordinate of this cylinder, and phi tilde describing the phi tilde, which is the coordinate of the dual cylinder, is of different character. Phi is chiral, and phi tilde is twisted chiral. So, phi chiral. And after teleology along the imaginary direction, you get phi tilde, which is twisted chiral. So what this means is that, I remind you, please remember, recall this definition of mirror symmetry. Mirror symmetry exchanges chiral on one side and twisted chiral of the other side. So this shows that T-duality is mirror symmetry. This is one important lesson learned from just simple manipulation on the superspace. Actually, you can also examine this claim and say, for example, if you consider the case of compact torus, this is non-compact torus, but let's just consider compact torus. Suppose you have a rectangular torus of radius, say, R2 in the horizontal side and direction, and R1 for the vertical direction. then this must be T dual, say T duality on this R1 direction will send this to another torus. R2 as before, but this length, the radius in this vertical direction turns to 1 over R1. And let's just compare the complex structure and the Kähler class. Complex structure of this rectangular torus is measured by the ratio of the radii. So R2 over R1. And the Kähler class is given by the area of the torus, which is R1 times R2. And on this side, complex structure is given by the ratio of the length of the size, and it is just this, which is this. And the Kähler class is given by the area, which is 1 R2 times 1 over R1. So it's R2 over R1. And indeed, complex structure and Kähler classes are exchanged. So indeed, this is another property of mirror symmetry. And this I just done this for this rectangular torus, but you can replace by some slanted torus or with torus with B field. Okay. Okay, so now we are ready to go to this proof or derivation of mirror symmetry. So, as I explained at the beginning, the idea is to apply this T-duality on linear sigma model. So let me explain what I mean by this. The mirror of linear sigma model. So I remind you that this linear sigma model is simply a simple U1 to say K gauge theory with charged fields, say Φ1 through Φn of various charges. And what we consider is T-duality applied to the phases of phi i's. So the phases of phi I roughly corresponds to, well, up to gauge transformation, it precisely corresponds to applied to the torus fibers of this toric manifold. A manifold corresponding to this linear sigma model. For example, if you consider this CP1, then it has two, described by two chiral superfields. So it's with U1 gauge there with two superfields of charge 1 and 1. And there are two phases, but one of them is just a U1 gauge transformation. But the other, the relative one, is the one that corresponds to the circle fiber on the over some segment. So this is given by, so CP1 is S2, and this is vibration over the space of phi 1 squared, phi 2 squared, which is constrained to be R, so this is a segment, and this phase direction is this fiber of this fiber bundle over the segment. But what we do is essentially do this T duality along the all phases, including the direction of the gauge transformation. So there are two points to be careful, or two points which are new. The one is the fact that phi I is charged, transforms under gauge transformation, or coupled to the gauge field. This is new feature, gauge field, phi mu. And the second point is that phi I equal to zero is allowed. So at this locus, it's like this point here and point here. At this locus, the circle, the torus fiber, degenerates. Circle on which we are performing T duality has, say, some of the direction is zero size. So that's another new point. We have been just considering fixed size circle, or fixed circle, or fixed circumference cylinder. You may actually, this may be done also for varying size circle, but here is more radical case, where the circle fiber shrink to zero size, like here, or like in this example of the two sphere. So you have to deal with these two new features. Let me just do it one by one. The first is more elementary than the second. So let's start with the first case, first feature, which is the fact that this phi is charged. Okay, so let's just consider T duality on a phase of a charged field. Let's just look at the simplest possible example, just one scalar field, complex scalar field with charge 1 under U1 gauge transformation. And the covariant derivative, so that's the action. The kinetic term of this scalar field is given by this. And this is I v mu phi squared. This is the gauge field. So this is where the coupling resides. And let me choose to work with this polar coordinate, phi and var phi, rho and var phi, and it's just this plus rho squared. This is the kinetic term. Now let's just focus on this part. Because phi doesn't enter into, var phi doesn't enter into here. So we are trying to do T duality on this. Okay? So T dualize var phi and using the path integral. And rho is varying, rho is a field, rho is also a field, but let's for now. So this is related to this problem. So let's for now forget about it. Let's for now consider rho equal to not rho is non-zero and fixed. Okay. So again, I start with another Lagrangian with extra field. And in this case, it's just similar to the first case. The only difference is that you have this term. So let's just mimic the first case. First example, where you started with this action. B wedge. Now, in the first example, we had considered only B wedge d phi, but now because we have d phi plus B, I just include this. So B is a one-form field, and phi is a circle value function. And first, do the B integral, then I find you can solve for B and plug the result into here, then you get the action, which is rho squared d phi plus V squared. And this is nothing but that part of the action. What is a V? Oh, sorry, V is a gauge field. So V is V mu dx mu gauge field, U1 gauge field. That enters into this covariant derivative. Yeah, it's just a one form. Locally, it's described as a one form. And if the U1 bundle is non-trivial, then if you change from another patch, you have to do this gauge transformation. But it's essentially just a one-form field. Yeah. Yes. This is the system of phi and V, or rho and var phi and V. And I'm just focusing on phi part, keeping fixed rho and V. And later, we will just do the path integral over rho and v. But now I'm just focusing on this var phi part. Okay. And we have seen that you just reproduce this part of the action starting from this. So we can, we might, you could just start with this action. Okay. So as before, we can do the second way to do this path integral. This is to do this var phi integral first. Then this part is the same, so B can be written as before as D of phi tilde, where phi tilde is a map, the circle value function as before. Now what you're left with is, as before, the part coming from here, 1 over 4 rho squared and d phi tilde squared. But there is another term, this term, b wedge b term. So you also have I 2 pi, and b is d phi tilde wedge b term.
Yes. Now the alpha is written as a phase.
That's right. Yes.
So the alpha for this alpha.
That's right. So there, you will also expect, yes, some Jacobian from the varying radius, and that's also true. Also, when you discuss this case, if you consider, yes, if you do this, usually you have to be careful about Jacobian, and I'm not being so much, I'm not being careful about this.
But the Jacobian not only depends on the radius, but it also depends on the alpha.
Yes, it may depend on var phi and rho, everything, but this place that enters in will be not in this part of this Lagrangian, and that will be this Jacobian usually enters into so-called this dilatant part that is coupled to the curvature of the Riemann surface. So right. But I'm not. So this part, that part of the action will not be so relevant to the discussion I'm going to give, especially in the derivation of this mirror symmetry, where we are going to focus on one kind of term in the Lagrangian, and that doesn't enter into here, enter there. So I'm not. Keep track of those Jacobians. I do not keep track of. Oh yes, actually not in here, but in the supersymmetric case, where we will focus, we will also lose track of this kinetic term part. I will not trace what the exact dual of this, but I will focus on this so-called superpotential part, and there you know that you don't have to worry about it. Yes. Okay. Anyway, so this is the new part. That's the effect of having the effect of phi being charged. Or alternatively, by this partial integration, this can be written as phi tilde wedge d of v, or this is the curvature. So what this shows is that phi tilde enters into the action or enters into the system as dynamical. Phi tilde is like theta angle, but it's a dynamical field. Dynamical theta angle. I remind you that the theta angle enters in this 1 plus 1 dimensional system as the coefficient of this curvature term. So that's the most important lesson, and that's the most important effect of fire being charged. The theta angle term is action Lagrange, well, action has I times 2 pi I over, if you have action like this, this is so-called theta angle. Now, it's like that term, except that this is a field. So, theta angle field, or theta angle being dynamical, yes. Okay. And let's just move on to the supersymmetric case. I could just do this same thing, but it's enough to note this fact and pay attention to the supersymmetry. So let's just state this. So the system I'm considering is the system with this type of simplest gauge theory, d4 theta, phi bar e to the v phi minus, say, 2e squared sigma mod sigma plus real part of this twisted superpotential. Well, t is r minus I theta. This is the ordinary theta angle, it's just a parameter. The important fact here is that this theta angle enters into the action coupled to the gauge field in this way. And we can use this fact and this knowledge to determine what this dual superpotential is. So let's just perform T-duality. So this is phi is chiral. What we learned last in this cylinder example is that it's T-dual along the imaginary direction, sorry, actually the imaginary direction of the log of phi must be twisted chiral superfield. Superfield, and I just denote this dual by, say, y. Let's just call it y, name it y. So this is, what I mean by this is this argument of phi is t dual to the imaginary part of y. And also, you can read, actually you can do the same using the superspace formalism, and you learn that this phi bar e to the v phi is mapped to y plus y bar. The real part is essentially this rho squared. Rho is that. Okay. Actually, you can also see this also by reading this action, but let me just postpone saying that. The dual action must be is written in terms of two twisted chiral superfield, y and sigma. So it must be of some form like minus k, Keller potential for y bar and sigma bar. And the classical part is just this. So I'm not going to say what this is exactly. The superpotential term is important. So remind you that theta angle enters into this in this way, and the dual field. So y is like, say, suppose y is written in terms of a minus I var phi, and phi is written as rho e to the I phi, sorry, plus fermions. Then this var phi enters in the same way as here, as theta. Okay? So that means that you find that this superpotential part is just given by this. This minus d is shifted by y here. Sorry, I have minus here, so this is minus theta angle. So that's why it has an opposite sign compared to this classical theta angle part t, or theta. So that's what you expect, what you naively do, what you get from this naive derivation. So you might say that this is the superpotential part of the dual system. And this is actually false. This is not enough. And we are ignoring this, the other part, the other fact. We are assuming that this phi or rho is non-zero and fixed, and rho equal to zero doesn't play any role here, but that's wrong. Okay, so let's just explain that part. So the effect of allowing phi equal to zero. So this original system, linear sigma model, original linear sigma model of this one charged field phi and v, and this real vector superfield v, has potential u, which is e squared over 2 and phi squared minus r squared. And r is positive at higher energies, as we have seen last time. So this is charge plus, so the sum of the charges is 1. So the r is positive, large positive, at higher energies. And for that positive r, the potential takes the following form. So it's like really like a Mexican hat or a wine bottle potential. And in order to have a finite action configuration, we want this phi to be at the bottom of the potential in most part of the space, especially at spatial infinity. So we want this phi squared to r at infinity, or actually space-time infinity. So it appears that there is no problem. We want this phi to be at the bottom, which is away from rho equal to zero, phi equal to zero. But of course, it's not true. This is only at infinity, and at the interior part of the space-time, we may have a point where phi vanishes. So such a configuration is called, but there are such configuration, and those are called vortex configurations. Especially when you are interested in the configuration that minimizes the action in a given topological type, we have such vortex. And let me explain what kind of thing it is. So, for example, example of vortex. So phi, so let's call z x1 plus ix2 be the complex coordinate of the Euclideanized two-dimensional space, and phi z z bar is given by some f function of the absolute value only and z over z. And the this function behaves like linearly and then approaches to square root r here. Okay? So that's f of z. So it behaves like near zero, it's like constant times z. So it vanishes at zero at z equals to zero. And at infinity, it's like constant times z square over z over this. So it is winding, this is near zero, and this is near infinity. And so this winding number one around the spatial infinity, around the space-time, Euclideanized space-time infinity. And for a suitable, so the action is the one coming from this potential and the one coming from the gauge and scalar kinetic term. And there's a, these two kinds of terms tries to flatten the configuration or squeeze the potential configuration, and there's some balance between the, there's some, for some function f, the two balances, and this gives us a solution. So that's the vortex configuration, and for some specific f, it's an action minimizing solution. Okay, so what's most important is that let's look at this var phi, the phase of this. This var phi, so there's this is z equal to zero. If you take a circle around this z equal to zero, the core of the vortex, then if you start with phi, then end with phi plus 2 pi, winding number one. And this must be tedial to something that creates momentum for the phi tilde. And that's, as I said, it's insertion of e to the I phi tilde at z equals to zero. Okay? And there are many of such things. Z equals to zero can be everywhere. So that means in the dual theory, you are inserting these kind of things everywhere. And if you sum them up, it's like having a potential of this type in the action. If you have a potential, then if you consider path integral, then if you drop those parts, then you will be considering summing over those things. So that's the effect of having a vortex configuration. And in particular, there's so-called supersymmetric vortex configuration. This is the some special configuration that preserves half of the supersymmetry, 2,2 supersymmetry. And this is the one that can create a superpotential term. And this is simply the supersymmetrization of e to the I phi tilde. And y is like this, so the supersymmetrization is having e to the minus y in the superpotential. Actually, twisted superpotential, because it's a twisted chiral superfield. So I conclude from this that the dual, the mirror superpotential, twisted superpotential for the mirror linear sigma model is given by y minus t sigma. This is just from this dualization and also from this vortex configuration effect, you have this term. So this is the classical part. This is from the charge effect, and this is from this vortex. You might feel that this argument is rough, but actually you can make a more precise analysis of analyzing the effect of vortex configuration to some particular class of correlation functions, and then you can see that this is the exact form. And so this is the exact dual superpotential. And this fact, in this way I explained, can be explained in this way, classical charge effect and vortex effect. But also you can also show this, that this is the exact expression from another argument using the symmetry and the holomorphy of this superpotential. So the proof of this exactness is actually the best way, the quickest way is to use this holomorphy of this superpotential and the symmetry, meaning this U1 vector and anomalous U1 axial symmetry and some asymptotic conditions. Which says that the effect of vortex must be weaker if you take the limit of this T or R to be large. So this is something I will not go into detail here, but I just wanted to say that there's an alternative argument that shows the exactness of this answer. Yes.
Yes,
in this argument, we just we wanted to find the effect of phi being charged, and then found this. But this itself won't change because it's just you can do this for varying phi. So this effect stays there. So there must be such a term. But what we were ignoring is the fact that there's a configuration where phi vanishes. Exactly when the phi vanishes, this no longer is applicable. Decomposition. Yes, this thing. Yes. Right. So this effect, this tells you that this if you consider this argument, we have this the radius varying phi fields theory. But the radius of the circle varies from place to place. And then for each place you can apply this, but for some place, say z equal to zero, this is the point where this winding number for phi is created. At that place, in the dual description, it must be that the momentum is created. And that's taken care of by inserting this operator. So this is the right thing, as long as you take that effect into account. And taking that effect into account is given by adding one more term in the twisted superpotential, which is this. Or adding this into the Lagrangian. Yes. Derive this meaning, right, so what I said by word is that computing some correlation function in this system, some special kind of correlation function, which vanishes unless you take into account that vortex configuration. So this correlation function is, what was this? Okay, some two-point function of fermions, chi plus x and chi minus, say, z and zero. Some two special kind of two correlation function, and if you ignore such effect, then this is zero, but this is expressible in terms, so this is non-zero, and the answer is non-zero contribution comes from vortex configuration. And this thing can be written in terms of this dual variable y, and just in the dual description, the same thing, this original, and the same thing is non-zero by the presence of e to the minus white part in this twisted superpotential. And you can just this is enough to say that there must be this term. Okay. Convincing or not? yeah. Right, it's so when you say path integral, so it's like comparing some, this is like comparing some consequence. But what we are doing is simply, honestly, just trying to trivialize this variable and then take into account of some configuration that that modifies this naive story. So there's this basic background or basic story, and then to fix the detail, you can just compute some simple examples, and then you can conclusively say that this must be there. Okay. And another thing is that this is related to this question about this Jacobian, and because of this other alternative strong argument, you cannot have that effect of Jacobian into here. But of course, there can be an effect, actually have not been even been trying to find out what this K is. And also, if the worksheet is curved, then there's also some so-called dilaton term, where the Jacobian typically enters. And that part I have not been also been just, I have not been tracing. And this is not so easy to trace. And this part is not determined. But what's determined is this part. There's one part of the action which is which can be determined. And this is sometimes very powerful, even though it is just one part. And sometimes it's enough to under some condition, it's enough to characterize the system. Okay, so this is the basic example: U1 gauge theory with just one charged field. The dual is a system of two twisted chiral superfield, or one twisted chiral superfield and one gauge field with this super potential. That's the mirror. And let's just move on to the more general case, say U1 to the K gauge theory with N charged fields. Say charge Q1A through QNA. The original Lagrangian, let's take the one without super potential. QIAVA, PI, and this is to say engineer this nonlinear sigma model with non-trivial target space. So if you consider this charged the theory with charged scalar field or charged chiral superfield, this reduces at low energies or in the limit where E gauge coupling constant to be taken to infinity, you get a nonlinear sigma model whose target space is, in this example, is just some toric manifold. Okay. And that's been explained in earlier part of the lecture. So this is the system, and this corresponds to at, say, E A is the infinity limit for some suitable range of, so T A is real complex and real part and imaginary part. For a suitable range of RA, it reduces to nonlinear sigma model whose target space is a toric manifold. C to the N modulo C star to the K. Okay. Yes. Okay, so what I do is just again, just in this case, we T take the T dual of each phi i's. So arg phi I, the phase of this phi I is T dual, then imaginary part of y I, or y I is a twisted chiral, and periodic with period 2 pi I. And I claim that the superpotential is, I may explain it later in more detail why you get this, but perhaps if you want to see this, then this it's easier to understand this thing. So this is K. And this, oh sorry, this is times sigma A. And this part is the classical. And this is the part from the charge defect, the fact that this phi I is charged. And these are from vortex effect, or non-perturbative effect. Just like in here. Yes, this is the mirror for the mirror superpotential, right. Mirror linear sigma model superpotential. Okay. So in the limit EA goes to infinity, then you get original system, original linear sigma model goes to nonlinear sigma model whose target space this toric manifold, which is this space of phi obeying this equation modulo U1 to the K. And the mirror side this limit corresponds to the limit where sigma A is heavy, the gauge field is heavy because of this mixing term, and it's appropriate to integrate out sigma A's or VA's or sigma A's. And by the gauge dynamics I have just said last time, and again today also I just have to say by word, you can treat the sigma just as if it's just an ordinary chiral superfield. Then integration over sigma is essentially constraining this term to be zero. So that requires induces a constraint, resulting in a constraint. Which is the vanishing of this sigma linear term for A1 to K. So what you get is a C star with dimension N minus K. This is the space of Y's, Y1 to Yn. Because Yi's are all periodic, each will give us C star, but there's a new constraint So it's C star to the, there are K constraints, so it's a subspace of C star to the N of codimension K, and this is this. So the field space is C star to the N minus K, or map to the C star to the N minus K, and the superpotential is simply the rest, sum of these exponentials as a function on this C star to the N minus K. And this is the mirror. Is the superpotential of the mirror of toric sigma model. So we have obtained the mirror, at least the part of the information of the mirror of the nonlinear sigma model whose target space is a torus. Yes. Yes. Right. So while I is like, this is like real part of yi, and this is imaginary part of yi. And when you say c star, maybe you should say e to the yi, or e to the minus or plus yi. So let me show you an example. Example. So U1 gauge theory with N charge 1 field, charge 1, 1, 1. Then you know that in the limit of E gauge coupling to infinity, then you get nonlinear sigma model with CP N minus 1 as the target with complexified Kähler class given by T times H. So this is linear sigma model has T, which is this R minus I theta, where H is the generator of the second integral cohomology group. And if you do the T duality on the phase, you get, again, still U1 gauge theory with Y1 through Yn that couples to the gauge field as dynamical theta angle. And not just that, there is this, so this is a coupling as a dynamical theta angle, and not just that, there's this e to the minus Y1, e to the minus Yn. And in the limit where E is taken to infinity, sigma is heavy, so it's appropriate to integrate out. Then you get this constraint. And then you're left with the superpotential, which is minus y1 through minus yn. Or just solving one of yi in terms of the rest, say solving the last one in terms of the first n minus 1, you get plus e to the minus t plus y1 plus yn minus 1. And this is nothing but affine total potential, a n-type affine total potential. And n equal to 2 case is the case where you have, for n equal to 2, you get just minus 1 plus e to the minus t plus y, which is this Stein Gordon things, which I have told you about as the first example of mirror symmetry. So this shows that this nonlinear sigma model whose target space is CPn minus 1 is mirror to this Landau-Ginzburg model with superpotential given by a n-type affine total potential. Okay, let me just do one more example and then finish. The other example is again one U1 with charge 1 field, n of them, and charge minus d field. And you know that this is so this is parameterized by t, and this for t larger than 0, this is nonlinear sigma model on a non-compact manifold, which is the total space of O minus B over CP n minus 1. Or T is negative infinity. This is orbifold C to the n of over Z D. The mirror is again U1 gauge theory with Y1 through Yn and Yp, with superpotential given by Y1 plus Yn minus D Yp minus T sigma. That's from this dualization. That's the effect of the fact that these are charged. And then you have the sum over the exponentials. Then you get the constraint. If you take this limit of e to be infinity, you get this constraint. And the superpotential is just sum over exponentials. And this constraint is solved. Solution to the constraint is given. Solution is given by Yi is given by D times Zi from 1 to n, and Yp is given by minus T over D plus Z1 through Zn. And this is not one-to-one correspondence. This from Y to Z is 1 to ZD n minus 1 correspondence, namely ZI sent to ZI plus 2 pi I over MI over D, where MI is mod D integer and sum over MI vanishing. Doesn't change Y, modulo 2 pi I. So what you find is the mirror is Landau-Ginzburg orbifold with superpotential given by e to the minus y1 is simply minus z1 to the d, dn to the d, d over d, e to the minus z1 product is the minus the n. And the orbifold group is Vd n minus 1. That maps e to the minus di to omega I e to the minus di. It's just this, but in a different language. It's just this, and product of all phases is 1. So that's another example. So this is the mirror of this nonlinear sigma model on the total space of O minus D over C P N minus 1 or the orbifold. When D is not the same as N, when D is equal to the N, then T is a real parameter, as we have seen. And that's also true on the mirror side. When D is not the same as D, then this T is a running parameter in here, in the original side, and also here, because this homogeneity of e to the vi's are not perfect, and this tells you how T runs also on the mirror side. The final remark is that this will be explained in more detail later from the next lecture. When linear sigma model has the superpotential P times G phi 1 through phi n, so this degree D superpotential, then that corresponds to, in the linear sigma model side, so this is corresponds to degree D hypersurface in, say, Cp n minus 1 or Landau-Ginzburg orbifold of phi 1 to the d plus, well, with superpotential g and gamma zb. If you do this, what happens is that this phase rotation symmetry for p and phi 1 to the phi d, phi n, is lost. And that must correspond to, that must be trivial to the winding number conservation for yi's, y1 through yn and yp. So that means that e to the minus yi can take zero value, or in other words, this will be explained in more detail later, but this is the right good variable. I should be careful. Okay. So the claim is the mirror of this degree D hypersurface in Cp n minus 1 or the Landau-Ginzburg orbifold is, again, Landau-Ginzburg orbifold with superpotential x1 to the d plus xn to the d plus e to the t over d. I'm just copying that w tilde. And gamma tilde is vdn minus 1, which sends this. And the reason that this form doesn't change is the decoupling theorem. The fact that this superpotential term cannot affect the twisted superpotential. Okay, sorry, I have to finish right now.